It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 47 degrees under fair skies. At the airport, they are indicating southerly winds at 15 miles per hour, 61% humidity, and 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for mostly sunny skies for the rest of the day, partly cloudy skies overnight, and mostly sunny skies tomorrow, too. Highs near 49 for today and tomorrow. Southerly winds 10 miles per hour for today and tonight, becoming completely calm and finally turning to the southeast tomorrow afternoon. Coming up on the Midday Report, there's a rather large Navy vessel docked in Kodiak. Brian Benoit went aboard and has a report. Lots of flooding is going on in western Alaska. And the Senate passed a bill that would allow the state to develop land for carbon credits. There were stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. There is a chance President Biden may head to the G7 meeting in Japan tomorrow and then head right back home, where he's in a standoff with congressional Republicans over the nation's debt ceiling. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy and other conservatives are demanding federal spending cuts to go along with increasing the country's borrowing limit, without which the U.S. heads into default possibly in a matter of weeks. Biden says the debt ceiling is a standalone issue. He and congressional leaders are currently holding talks. Democratic Congressman Jerry Connolly says two aides who were injured in his district office by a man wielding a baseball bat have been released from the hospital. NPR's Deirdre Walsh reports on the increased focus on security for lawmakers.
Connolly praised local police for responding quickly to the attack in his Fairfax, Virginia district office Monday morning. He said the man who struck two aides, one senior staffer and an intern on her first day at the office, wasn't motivated by political ideology, but was mentally ill. Capitol Police are conducting a security review. But Connolly says some district offices are in federal buildings with security and others in strip malls without it.
What's the balance between accessibility for the public we serve and security for the staff and public we serve? And that's going to be different for every office.
Connolly is relieved his aides were okay, but he said his entire team is still dealing with the trauma of the attack. Deirdre Walsh, NPR News, the Capitol.
The Russian government claims its forces destroyed a Patriot surface-to-air missile defense system during overnight strikes on Ukraine. We have the latest from NPR's Joanna Kisses in Dnipro.
The Russian military news outlet Zvezda quoted the Russian defense ministry as saying it had aimed its strikes at Ukrainian soldiers and ammunition storage sites. But the Ukrainians say none of these missiles hit their targets. Valery Zaluzhny, commander-in-chief of Ukraine's armed forces, said they were all shot down. The Patriot system, which was supplied by the U.S., has already shot down hypersonic Kinjal missiles in the past. Russia claims these missiles are unstoppable. Officials in the capital, Kyiv, said the strikes were exceptionally intense there, but that no one was hurt. Joanna Kakissis, NPR News, Dnipro.
The Department of Justice says it's charging a former Apple engineer with attempting to steal autonomous systems technology. Matt Olson, who leads the DOJ's National Security Division, says the stolen code is alleged to be trade secrets used by U.S. companies to develop self-driving cars and advance automotive manufacturing equipment.
These cases demonstrate the breadth and complexity of the threats we face, as well as what is at stake.
They say the suspect, Weibao Wang, had fled to China. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closes down 336 points. You're listening to NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. a U.S. Navy missile cruiser, the USS Lake Champlain, docked in Kodiak over the weekend. It's the second Navy vessel to visit the community this month as part of this year's Northern Edge military training. The first was the USS Harper's Ferry on May 4th. KMXT's Brian Benoit toured the ship during its visit and has this report.
The USS Lake Champlain is more than 500 feet long and cruised into Kodiak late Friday night. Armed guards stood at the entrance to keep civilians at a distance. The missile cruiser was tied off with the bow facing away from town, just visible through Saturday afternoon's fog and mist. Lieutenant Commander Austin Fleming is the ship's combat systems officer. He says Kodiak was a point of interest for the exercise because of its infrastructure.
So we're looking at the cruise ship terminals where they have the ports that can support taking on board a Navy ship, and towns with a size where 350 or so sailors rolling in won't completely overwhelm the town.
Northern Edge is the military training exercise that's currently taking place. Over 10,000 troops are deployed around the state between Eielson Air Force Base, Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson, and various other locations. Several naval ships are also patrolling and practicing firing around the Gulf of Alaska. Most of the time, each vessel will be at sea, but some of these ships, like the Lake Champlain, are visiting major ports around the state. Fleming says part of why they're in town now is to restock on supplies.
We'll try to pull back in about once a week and just stay topped off. Keeps the food and vegetables fresh, keeps gas in the tank, keeps us ready if we do get called somewhere else.
Junior Lieutenant Mallory Miller is the main propulsion officer on board. She says she's excited to visit Alaska, but it wasn't always smooth sailing to get here.
This last week in the Gulf of Alaska was a little bit rough for some of us. Some people don't have their sea legs yet, so it's getting used to that. We have our heavy weather cable that came in handy quite a bit, so we were taking some heavy seas. And kind of you get used to it a little bit, and it doesn't really affect you, but with the storms that came in this last week, it was a doozy.
About two-thirds of the ship's crew are able to leave at a time to explore the town, with the rest remaining on board to keep the ship running while docked. Kodiak is the Lake Champlain's second port visit in Alaska. After it leaves the island, the crew will be at sea in the Gulf of Alaska before heading south. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Benoit.
The Upper Yukon River village of Circle is facing a long recovery after suffering a devastating ice jam flood over the weekend. Tanana Chiefs Conference Environmental Health Director Kyle Wright says the ice and water damage is in line with historic breakup floods that hit Eagle in 2009 and Galena in 2013. Wright says a lot of homes in Circle were affected.
There's at least one that was carried all the way away, and there were others that were moved and that are beyond repair.
Wright says community infrastructure was also damaged.
Yeah, no electricity, the generators were flooded. The clinic, which is fairly new, built in the last few years, ventilation got wet, so that'll have to be remediated. The water plant got about a foot and a half of water inside of it. The store looked like it got water up to maybe 6 or 8 feet inside. I mean, it's pretty well soaked. And the offices and the tribal hall had a lot of water in it. And I know the teacher housing got flooded, and it looked like the school did also.
Wright says heating oil and sewage releases are a concern, and the community well will need to be disinfected. But TCC did send out bottled water, and the village has a full water storage tank.
So they do have a tank full of safe drinking water. It's a little harder to access because there's no electricity for the pumps.
Wright says restoring power is a priority.
The Alaska Energy Authority has been working with the village on that, and they're planning to send up a couple of generators soon to power the community temporarily.
He says the tribe did an excellent job evacuating elders and children out of the community, and it's unclear how many people are still in Circle. The 2020 census lists the population at 42. Wright says residents are able to come and go as the Steese Highway out of Circle has remained open, despite at least one section where water is over the gravel road. Ice jam flooding continues to threaten communities downstream on the Yukon River. National Weather Service hydrologist Ed Plum says Fort Yukon suffered some flooding late Sunday.
We had reports of, water over roads and some structures and homes getting water in them.
Plum says villages farther downriver are now facing the same slug of water and ice.
Approximately about a 40-mile-long run of ice.
Plum says a river watch team plans to fly over Stevens Village, the Rampart Canyon, Tanana, and Galena today. And heavy snowmelt runoff into creeks continues to cause flooding in the Glen Allen area. Schools are closed again today, and the public sewer system is shut down due to water inundation. The utility is setting up porta potties around the community, and area residents are also asked to limit water usage. According to the Department of Transportation Post, there was water over a portion of the Glen Highway yesterday, but the road did remain open. Among area buildings flooded is a Bureau of Land Management field office. BLM spokesperson Scott Claggett says the office is closed until further notice.
BLM Glen Allen field office is currently flooded and electricity and sewage is down. It's a developing situation.
Claggett says the BLM hopes to resume some level of operations in Glen Allen soon.
We do have portable generators and, portable potties that were kind of looking at our options to make sure that we have functional service as soon as possible.
Claggett says water damage and well contamination will need to be assessed. The Alaska Senate unanimously passed a bill on Monday that would allow the state to develop land for carbon credits. Carbon credits are sold to those looking to offset their greenhouse gas emissions, including Fortune 500 companies under pressure from shareholders. Several companies in Alaska are already selling carbon credits by managing existing privately owned forests to capture and store more carbon dioxide. The new bill charges the Department of Natural Resources to do the same thing on state-owned land. Bill Willikowski, an Anchorage Democrat, told the Senate the bill is in line with the Constitution's mandate to use resources to the maximum benefit of the people. He said the program would not affect people's ability to use state forests, for hunting, camping, or fishing, and he says it doesn't block resource development.
This is the state responding to a need that exists in the free market. This is not a cap-and-trade program. We are not putting any emissions limits on anyone.
It's not clear how much money the program could earn in state revenue. Governor Mike Dunleavy's administration originally estimated carbon sequestration could bring in billions of dollars. In more recent committee meetings, a consultant estimated revenue in the tens of millions of dollars for the three pilot projects proposed. Department of Natural Resources Commissioner John Boyle says he hopes the program could start generating revenue in the next few years.
This is a huge step. I mean, we're very excited to see unanimous approval of the bill, and we think that that bodes well for passage in the House as well.
The bill passed unanimously in the Senate. House leaders have expressed support for the bill, but it faces a tight timeline to pass before the end of the regular session on Wednesday. That's tomorrow. Encampments in public spaces around Anchorage have been growing since the city's biggest shelter scaled down and weather warmed up. City codes generally prohibit camping on public land, but when there isn't enough housing, the city's power to clean camps up is limited. Officials haven't publicly said what or how they'll police within those sites. As Alaska Public Media's Jeremy Shea reports, that leaves a lot of people living in outdoors in limbo.
Brianna Witzke has been frequenting Anchorage Assembly meetings lately, where she confronts officials with some of the most immediate issues affecting people experiencing homelessness. Here's a bit of her testimony from the last one.
Transgender, 13 years. We have a massive homeless problem. You guys are going through the red tape bit by bit. And I'm here to tell you, I'm from the street, I am in the street, I am jobless, I am homeless, and I am this way because I'm here to help you guys.
Technically, she isn't homeless right now. She says she recently got a grant that covers rent for a place in Chugiak, but lately she's been living out of a van and tent in a vacant lot next to Cuddy Family Midtown Park. Dozens more tents are pitched in and around the immediate area. The 43-year-old sees herself as a guide for people who are homeless. Right now, she's trying to quickly build a more secure temporary space here for people to live that she envisions looking a lot like a typical drive-up campground. But Witski is operating in a big gray area. More and more people are illegally camping in Anchorage after shelter capacity was cut and temperatures rise. But under a federal court ruling, authorities generally can't enforce no camping laws when low barrier shelter spaces are full, which they are. Witski and hundreds of other people living out of cars and tents in Anchorage don't really know what will or won't be tolerated. For example, on the gravel footprint where a new National Archives building was once planned, Witski caught some heat recently. She was stacking shipping pallets to make three-sided stalls for tent sites.
All right, so if I stagger so across, I can make them stretch further. And what I can do is if I take, for a prime example, approximately 3.5 feet tall.
A municipal parks employee pulls up in a pickup truck.
This isn't happening with the pallets. So no okay. Pallet houses, no concrete slabs.
Your name is? Ma'am, your name is? Have a good day, bye!
Witski was not deterred. Later that day, she brainstormed ideas about what legalized camping should look like with a room full of officials and nonprofit leaders. It's a task force spearheaded by Assemblymember Felix Rivera. Rivera says there is wiggle room, legally speaking, to clear camps under certain conditions.
For example, you can't camp in parks. And so is the administration going to enforce that provision, and are they going to abate people out of parks? Those are the questions that I'm asking the administration to really be public about. What is their policy going to be this summer? Because I don't know.
Rivera says the campers and community at large need clarity.
But until then, it's sort of like a free-for-all.
For now, the plan is to meet the campers where they are. Teams from Anchorage Parks and Recreation are visiting known sites twice a week to clean up trash. Several service organizations and volunteers are also regularly providing food, basic medical care, and maintaining ties to social services and housing waitlists. Witski is pushing ahead with her campground and says she's even gotten gifts from individuals in the community to help cover her tab at Home Depot. In Anchorage, I'm Jeremy Shea.
An Alaska Airlines plane featuring new art by Crystal Worrell has been flying around Alaska. As KTOO's Katie Anastas reports, the design celebrates Alaska native language, art, and culture.
Gasps and cheers filled a room at the Juneau Airport when Hut Kwani landed.
So please keep your eyes outside. There it is!
Oh, there it is! Yeah. The plane's name means salmon people. Its blue, white, and pink design depicts salmon in Northwest Coast formline. Juno dance group Yiskuu was there to celebrate the inaugural flight. Group leader Nancy Barnes says she's been pacing back and forth all morning.
I've known Crystal since she was a tiny little girl. Just so proud of her.
Yiskuu performed a song called Admiration as Worrell walked into the room. Worrell was on the plane for its flight from Anchorage.
I saw our Tlingit language on the plane and heard everyone on the plane say Hut Kwani. So I just feel immensely proud. There's no English words for how I feel.
In a speech to those gathered to celebrate, she said restoring salmon runs in the Yukon and Kuskokwim rivers would require both traditional and modern techniques. It's an approach she uses in her art.
We won't be able to harvest again until the numbers get better. And the younger generations are not able to learn these fishing and preserving skills that have survived for generations. We must make change in our actions and thinking about the environment.
University of Alaska Southeast language professor Hune Lance Twitchell helped Worrell decide on the name. He walked attendees through the pronunciation.
Hut Kwani.
Hut Kwani.
Hut Kwani.
Hut Kwani.
I
turned in all my grades on Wednesday, but I'll adjust them. Y'all get A's.
According to Alaska Airlines, this is the first time they featured a language besides English on the main door of an aircraft. Worrell's grandmother, Sea Alaska President Rosita Worrell, alluded to cultural loss in her remarks.
I want to thank Alaska Airlines for bringing our language that previous generations had tried to suppress.
Hat Kwani is the same plane that Alaskans long knew as Salmon 30 Salmon. Marilyn Romano, Alaska Airlines Regional Vice President for Alaska, says the process began when it was time to repaint it.
Knowing it had to be repainted, that's when we had the opportunity to pause and really think about what could we do different.
Romano was familiar with Worrell's murals in Anchorage and Juneau, and the design shop Worrell shares with her brother. When the airline decided they wanted a new design, Romano says she knew just who to call. Hat Kwani continued onto Sitka, Ketchikan, and Seattle on Friday. The plane will fly throughout the Alaska Airlines network. In Juneau, I'm Katie Anastas.
The U.S. consumer boosted spending in April. I'm Nova Safo with a Marketplace Minute. Retail spending data released by the government shows a reversal last month. Spending rose 0.4%, the first increase of the year. Online spending jumped more than 1%. It's data like this that's left yet another central bank official considering more interest rate hikes. Cleveland Federal Reserve Chair Loretta Mester today echoed several other Fed officials, saying there may be a need for another rate hike. And more warnings from Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen about the consequences of not raising the debt ceiling. She says a U.S. default would likely trigger worldwide panic in financial markets and a recession here at home. Critical government functions such as border security and air traffic control could be disrupted. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute.